are directly related to each other. Have you thought about how everyone in your family, and even your extended family, would be affected if someone died? At the Martin Funeral Home, they are prepared to help the entire family through these life changes. No doubt, the death of a loved one is devastating, and the grieving process varies from person to person. All death-related business matters are handled personally by a member of the Martin family, either Ross or his son Tom Martin. For personal preference at a funeral home, let the Martin Funeral Home handle everything. The Martin Funeral Home, located on Center Avenue in Butler.
Well, looks like some showers possible today. We'll have a high today just about 76. Partly cloudy skies today with a low down to 73. But we got some sunshine as we go throughout the weekend, even into next week as well. So enjoy the 70s, enjoy the sunshine with about 74 degrees right now in downtown Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios. Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. Dave Malarkey is up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn here today. Wednesday. I'm still a little bit confused with the Labor Day holiday. I have to stop and think what day of the week it is. We have guests with us today. A little bit later on the program, we're going to be talking with the director of the Victim Outreach Intervention Center here in Butler County. It's known as VOICE, and boy, they do great work. They are the Next Tier Spotlight Nonprofit of the Month, so we'll be chatting with them a little bit later. But first, visiting with us online is Anna Schweikler from Penn State Extension, and we're going to be talking about canning and safety procedures when you're canning. Anna, nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us again here today.
Hi, Dave. Thank you.
You're talking to us from Meadville. That's your home base, that extension office in Crawford County, right?
Yes, it is.
So it's the canning season, or if not already, it soon will be, I guess, over the next several weeks. Huh? That's peak canning season.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, a lot of people have already started canning, you know, as the seasonal crops come in. But, yeah, canning definitely is in full swing right now, and probably throughout the early part of fall, a lot of people will be doing more canning.
Yes, and sometimes you have to move pretty quickly on that. You know, all of a sudden the tomatoes are on and you've got tomatoes coming out of your eyeballs, and you get canning pretty quickly.
That's right. That's right. You do have to move on it quickly before they go bad.
This is, at least in some quarters, a bit of a lost art and science, isn't it? I mean, if you go back a couple of generations, just about everybody canned.
Yeah, Dave, you're right. So canning used to be incredibly popular, and then for quite a while it definitely was not as popular. But we are seeing quite a resurgence of it now. It's amazing how many, especially younger generations, are more interested in canning their own foods, because a lot of people are now in the movement where they want to know where their food is coming from. They want to know what's going into it. So when they're preserving their own food at home, then they are in control, and they can grow it themselves or know the farmer where they're buying it from, and then do the preservation themselves.
Anna, listeners, if you have not been with us when we've chatted with her previously, and we've talked with her a few times over the past couple of years, Anna is a food safety and quality food, family and health educator for Penn State Extension. She is also a registered dietitian and a licensed dietitian nutritionist. So she is a good person to talk to when we discuss, we say canning. Actually, in today's day and age, the more proper term would be home food preservation, would it not, Anna?
Yeah, home food preservation encompasses all of the ways that we preserve food. So that could include canning, freezing, or drying. But today I just wanted to focus on canning.
Well, let's talk about some of the safety procedures that people need to know about. And by the way, folks, this is very, very important. It literally could be a matter of life and death. Now some people might be saying, what are you talking about, Dave? How could home canning potentially be extremely dangerous? Well, tell us, Anna, how?
Sure, yeah. So home canning, if it's not done correctly, really can be a matter of life and death. And there are stories out there of people who have died from improperly canned foods, and I'll share that with you in just a moment. But the culprit that we are most worried about with home canning is a bacteria called Clostridium botulinum. It is an anaerobic bacteria, meaning it doesn't need oxygen to survive. So when foods are canned in the jars, they are in an anaerobic, an oxygen-free area, and that bacteria will survive. It forms a spore that protects it, and if you don't take the temperature up high enough, it requires 240 degrees Fahrenheit to kill that Clostridium botulinum bacterium. That will survive, and then it can release a very dangerous toxin, which is the botulism toxin. And botulism is a toxin that affects the nervous system. So this isn't a food safety issue that we're talking just about some nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, some of those common symptoms of a foodborne illness. But this really is something that can massively impact the body, and lots of people who contract this through eating unsafe food end up, you know, they can be in the ICU, intubated, in a coma. It really depends. There is really quite severe complications. But the story I wanted to share with you is just a few years ago, just across the state line over in Ohio, there was a case of a church potluck where people became sick and one person died from homemade potato salad that was made from home canned potatoes that were processed improperly. So therefore the Clostridium botulinum bacteria survived. It released its toxin and it made people very, very sick. And like I said, one person unfortunately died from that event. So it truly is a matter of life and death. We really need to be careful how we are processing our foods and following the recipes correctly. So we'll get into that some more here.
More than just a tummy ache then, huh? Wow.
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely.
And at a church potluck. Who would have believed that? What a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
Clostridium botulinum. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
You are, yes.
Do scientists and nutritionists have a shortcut for that, or do we have to say the whole thing every time we're talking about it?
Very often we'll just refer to it as botulism. Most people know what botulism is, or they've at least heard of botulism, so that's how we can shorten it up.
Now, I'm vaguely remembering this from my childhood, and I was pretty young, but my father was a great backyard gardener. And when I say backyard, he had a huge garden with tomatoes and beans and peppers and corn and all kind of stuff. And he and my mom would kind of team up when it came time to do the canning. They set up shop in the basement of our house. They had, you know, an auxiliary stove and sink and facilities and all that down there, and that became canning headquarters. And all I can remember is it was awfully hot down there, and you had to, I mean, after heated the stuff you were going to can, then you had to bathe it somehow or something like that. Is my memory correct?
You are correct, Dave. So that's what we call processing. So, yeah, you prepare your recipe, whatever type of food you're making. You're going to prepare those, the vegetables or the fruits or whatever it is, and you fill it in your jar, and then you have to process the jar. And that processing is where we put it in either a water bath canner or a pressure canner, and we heat the jars for a certain amount of time and under a certain amount of pressure in the pressure canner, depending on what it is, what the recipe says. But the point of that is to destroy the microorganisms that are in the food potentially, so that way we know that it's safe, so that it kills those microorganisms, it deactivates the enzymes in the produce, and it drives out the air in the jar so you get that nice tight seal. So that is the point of processing, and we need to make sure that we're doing it that way because there are old methods of processing. Well, I shouldn't even say processing, really, but there are old methods of canning that people used to do that are very unsafe, and people still do them today, but they are not at all safe. So it has to be either water bath or pressure canning. Some of those methods that are not safe include open kettle canning, which is where you just completely eliminating that processing step. Oven canning, solar canning, dishwasher canning, I mean, things like that are just absolutely unsafe. So we want to encourage people not to do those, but instead just use that water bath canner or the pressure canner.
Again, I was just a young child to kind of watching from the sidelines, but many of the techniques were just handed down from generation to generation. I don't recall my mom using a thermometer. I mean, they used the water bath method of canning, but I don't know. They were just guessing that it was hot enough, or I don't know.
Well, yeah, you don't really have to use a thermometer with this. The temperature requirements that we indicate would be 240 degrees for pressure canning to kill off that Clostridium botulinum, or 212 degrees is the boiling temperature of water for water bath canning. So those we know are safe based on a lot of scientific studies that have been done on canning and different processing methods. So that way we know that the recipes are safe and that it has effectively killed those microorganisms that can cause us to get sick.
So if you were using the water bath canning method and you had boiling water, then you'd be okay, huh?
Right, exactly.
Now, what about different products? We're talking about canning, folks, or more accurately these days, home food preservation, but canning in particular, with our guest who visits with us by telephone today from Penn State Extension. And that's Anna Schweikler. What about different products? For example, if you're canning tomatoes as opposed to peaches, you know, a vegetable and a fruit, do you need to do things differently there, or do you just treat them all the same?
No, you definitely don't treat them all the same. There is a difference. So anything that we call a high acid food. So that would be your fruits or a pickled product. So fruits are naturally high in acid. Pickled products, of course, we add a lot of vinegar to it, so it increases the acidity of that product. Those are safe to do in a water bath canner. There is also another type of canner out there. It's called an atmospheric steam canner, and those basically function the same way as that water bath canner would. So those would, that type of canner would be safe for those fruit and pickled products as well. But when we start moving into the vegetables and the meat category of food, those must be canned in a pressure canner because they have lower acid content in them. So if you remember your pH scale from school, the further down you go on the pH scale, the more acidic it is. And as you go further up on the pH scale, it's more alkaline. Well, we don't have foods that are really very alkaline, but if they cross the 4.6 mark on the pH scale, then it has to be done in a pressure canner. And all of our vegetables and meats fall over that line. They are above 4.6. Now, there is one food item that actually sits right on the line at 4.6, and that is tomatoes. So there is great variability of acidity among tomatoes because there's so many different varieties and things, of course. So how we can tomatoes actually depends on what we're doing to it. Sometimes it's safe to can tomatoes in a water bath canner. Other times we need to do them in a pressure canner. So if you are just going to be canning I use the term straight tomatoes. So if you're just going to be doing whole tomatoes, crushed tomatoes, juiced tomatoes, anything like that, it's just tomatoes, you're not adding anything else to it, they are safe to can in a water bath canner. However, you do want to add lemon juice to that just to help tip that acidity down just a little bit more to make sure it's safe. So we add a little bit of lemon juice is typically the way to do that. Vinegar or a citric acid tablet would be okay too, but most people just do lemon juice. And you would want to use a bottled lemon juice for this, rather than squeezing fresh lemon juice into it. You do want to have the consistent acidity of a bottled lemon juice. And the rule for that is simply 2 tablespoons per quart or 1 tablespoon per pint of tomatoes that you're processing. So it's pretty simple for doing it in the water bath canner with just tomatoes, add some lemon juice, and you're good to go. But if you're doing anything else with these tomatoes where you're adding meat or vegetables to it, such as if you're making a spaghetti sauce, then that definitely changes the pH of that product, and it moves it up on that pH scale above the 4.6 mark, so it has to be pressure canned to make sure that it's safe.
What about if you're adding lemon juice? What about one of those plastic rubbery fake lemons? You know what I'm talking about? That you squeeze them?
I know what you mean. So that is just also a bottled lemon juice. So yes, that would be fine.
Okay. We're talking about safe procedures for canning. Safety first, and as Anna said, this is nothing to take lightly. I mean, it's more than just a tummy ache. You can have some real serious problems if you end up doing this the wrong way. Are there any other safe canning methods other than what we've discussed, or does that pretty much cover it, Anna?
Nope, that pretty much covers it. It's the water bath canner or atmospheric steam canner, which you can use for high acid foods, or the pressure canner, which we would use for our vegetables and meats, those low acid foods. So that's it. Those are the only safe methods.
I didn't even know that you could home can meats.
Yes, a lot of people enjoy doing that, especially hunters. That is one thing I hear. I personally have never done it, but hunters say that they love canning their venison because it makes it really tender and delicious.
Let's take a break. I want to talk some more with Anna here about safe methods for preserving food as we enter the canning season. As she said, some of it's already been going on, depending on when your garden produce started coming on. But we'll talk a little bit more about it in just a moment or so. One of our sponsors on the program today is the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. And boy, while we're talking about backyard gardeners, don't forget, if you have a lot of excess produce that you're not going to be using and you're not going to be canning it, don't let it go to waste. You can donate excess garden produce to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank here in Butler, and they make it very easy to do. They have representatives every Saturday morning from 8 until noon at St. Michael's Social Hall on Center Avenue. It's on Butler's south side. It's right behind St. Michael's Church. So take any excess vegetables or fruits there on Saturday morning, and they'll be distributed to needy families at the food bank on Monday. They've been running this program for several years. It's been a great success, and it's a real treat and real nutritious, too, for the families who rely on the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank. They like to say at St. Vincent de Paul, "We stand tallest when we stoop to help others." It's a nice thought. Back to talk more with Anna Schweikler here on WISR right after these words.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way, getting there starts here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus, no car, no problem, the bus will get you there. 'Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
Welcome back. It's the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Nice to have you with us. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest visits with us by telephone today from Penn State Extension, Anna Schweikler. We're talking about safety when canning your vegetables and fruits from the garden or your backyard orchard here as we are heading into the real peak of the canning season here. What about recipes? I talked about my mom and the fact that she would be canning every year tomatoes and some other stuff from the garden. What about family recipes that have been handed down? Do we have any concerns about that, Anna?
Yeah, we do have concerns about family recipes. The problem with old family recipes is we don't know that they are safe. There's been a lot of research done on safe canning recipes over the years, and we strongly recommend that people use recipes that are coming from the USDA database, a cooperative extension service anywhere across the country, or Ball Blue Books are recommended. However, we do need to make sure that they are 1994 editions or more recent than that. Anything older than that, we just don't consider to be safe anymore because we don't know that they have adequate processing times or the right pressure settings for safety.
So be careful. I mean, you know, you might be using Aunt Bessie's or Grandma Ethel's recipe from, you know, a couple of generations ago. Yeah, maybe not such a good idea. Does Penn State Extension offer any further information on this question about recipes, Anna?
Absolutely, yeah. So we have lots of resources available through Penn State Extension on our website. We have a series called Let's Preserve, and it goes through pretty much any produce item you can think about. It includes meat, wild game. Soups are some of the new, that's one of the newer publications we have out. So there's a lot of great information that Extension puts out. But I also want to refer people to the USDA. Everything is available online as well through them, and it's called the Complete Guide to Home Canning. They have everything under the sun you can imagine preserving, information about that. And then another really great extension service that has a lot of information is the University of Georgia Cooperative Extension. They have a book out called So Easy to Preserve, and that is that's available through the University of Georgia, and that has everything from freezing, canning, dehydrating, lots of great information about canning as well. So they are excellent resources. And of course, we know that a lot of people use Ball Blue Books. Those have been a staple in the kitchens over the years. So that's okay too, but like I mentioned earlier, just make sure it's a 1994 or more recent edition of that.
Well, let's talk about some general canning guidelines here. Number one, I guess you should always use those mason jars, right?
Yes, absolutely. We want to make sure that you're using a jar that is designed for canning, not a single-use jar. You wouldn't want to use a glass jar that something from the grocery store that you picked up that, you know, your empty relish jar or mayonnaise jar or anything like that. Those are not considered safe canning jars, but mason jars are because they can withstand those high temperatures that we use for canning.
Glass is a little bit thicker. I always thought mason jar was a trade name, but it's not, isn't it? It's Ball that's the trade name.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, Ball is a very common brand that we see and hear, and there's a lot out there. But yeah, mason jar just refers to that general style of jar.
Mm-hmm. And if you're not canning in them, I've seen some pubs that use mason jar to serve beer in.
Yes, and lots of DIY Pinterest ideas using them as well.
Yeah. Now, what about those seals? And boy, I'm entering territory here where I really don't have any knowledge at all. But it's the real thin lid that has a rubber gasket on the bottom, and you kind of screw it onto the top of the mason jar. Talk about those a little bit. Are those reusable, for example, from year to year, or should you get new ones, or how do you properly use that, Anna?
Yeah, that's a great question, Dave. So what we recommend are the two-piece lids. So it's the flat lid piece that has the sealing compound on it, and then a screw band goes with it. So the lids with the sealing compound are single-use only. After they've been processed, you're not going to be able to get a good seal anymore from that particular lid. However, the screw bands, of course, are, so long as they're in good condition. So you can use those screw bands from year to year, but you want to check them. If they start to show signs of rust or anything, then I would recommend that you get rid of them and replace them with fresh, new screw bands so you don't have any rust that could potentially damage the seal or anything like that.
And I understand that to make sure you get a good seal, and of course, You'd want that because otherwise your product wouldn't be preserved at all. You have to leave the proper amount of space at the top of the jar. Is that correct?
Yes, that is called head space, and the head space varies for the different types of products that we can. But the reason we have that head space there is it draws out, the processing of the jar will draw out the air, that extra oxygen in the jar. And if you have too much head space, you might not be able to actually draw all of that extra air out during the processing. And if there's too little head space, then what can happen is the contents of the jar, the food can bubble up and out over and get on the rim of the jar, which would then impact the seal. Typically, if that happens, you're not going to get a good seal on your jar. So you definitely need to know what those headspace measurements are, and safe recipes will tell you what that correct headspace is. So always follow the recipe, but just as a general guideline, it's 1/4 inch for juices, jams, jellies, and relishes. It's 1/2 inch for fruits, tomatoes, and pickled products. And it's 1 to 1.5 inches for meats and vegetables, depending on the recipe.
So this is a real eye-opener for me. If you do this correctly, you're drawing the air out, the excess air. So you're creating, well, for example, when I go to the grocery store and buy a jar of Schmucker's jelly or jam and I open it up, you can tell that it would, you turn the lid and you hear the air rush in there, that it was in a vacuum. You're kind of doing that sort of thing by creating the proper headspace, as you were just describing?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what we're doing. We just use a different type of lid and a slightly different process than they do commercially, but yep, that's exactly what's happening.
How do you get that flat seal thing off the top of the jar? What do?
When you're going to open your can, good.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of popping it off. So we do recommend that you do not store the food with the screw band on after it's totally cools. You can take the screw band off and you just need that flat piece on to keep the seal. But then when you're ready to use your home canned good, you can just pop off that lid, and then, like I said, do not use that again for next year. Just toss that when you're done with it. But that will, you'll hear it. You'll hear the pop of the vacuum, basically, that when you're opening it up, of that air that you're now allowing to go back into the jar when you open it.
So you could carefully use like a table knife or something like that, because sometimes they're a little bit hard to break the seal, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yes, sometimes they are. And there's different types of can openers and that you can just basically hook the edge of it, and that'll come right off.
Something that I had no idea, I've never even heard this before, Anna. You need to be careful about the altitude of your house. If you're canning at home, you need to know how far you are above sea level. What the heck does that have to do with things?
Yeah, so that is actually very important, because our elevation above sea level actually affects the boiling temperature of water. So if we are supposed to be boiling in our water bath canner, if we're processing things at 212 degrees is what the requirement is for killing those microorganisms, but as you go up in elevation, the boiling temperature actually drops. So therefore, we do need to make altitude adjustments for our recipes if we are more than 1,000 feet above sea level. And most people probably have no idea what their altitude is, but it actually is very easy to find out. All you need to do is a very quick Google search on the internet, and you can find out what the elevation is of your area. So Butler, for example, I did a Google search of Butler elevation, and it came up as 997 feet. So that is right on the edge of that 1,000-foot mark for whether or not we need to make an altitude adjustment. And that, of course, could be variable depending on where you live in Butler. So my suggestion would be that you just go ahead and make that altitude adjustment. And typically what that means is just a matter of boiling a little bit longer. When you're processing your jar, that altitude adjustment might be that you're processing it for 5 additional minutes. Mm-hmm. Or if it's a pressure canner that you're doing vegetables or something, then you might make a slight adjustment to the amount of pressure you're processing out. But it's not really that big of a deal in terms of, you know, a big extra long process for what you do about that altitude. It's just adjusting the pressure or adjusting your boiling time, and that's it. So that really is important for reaching that temperature that's required to make sure you're killing off the microorganisms in the jar.
And once you finish your canning process, you should not turn your mason jars upside down, huh?
Right, yeah, so that's something that a lot of people used to do back in the day, especially with open kettle canning when they wouldn't process jars. They'd fill up jars with hot product, put the lid on, and then turn the jars upside down. And that is not at all recommended. What they would end up doing back, you know, using that unsafe method is the lid would suction down and it would look like it was a sealed lid. However, they didn't actually do anything to process it to kill off the microorganisms. So that, again, is kind of one of those older unsafe methods that we don't recommend. So once you're done processing it, you just want to pull the jar straight up out of the boiling water or out of the pressure canner using a jar lifter. And just be very careful, of course, because of the heat and the steam. But pull that straight up with your jar lifter. Set it on either lay down a few towels and set it on that or a cooling rack. But you want to place your jars in an area where they won't get bumped and there aren't a lot of drafts coming through. Just a nice safe spot for them to sit. Place your jars at least 2 inches apart so the air can circulate around them, and then just let them sit undisturbed for about 12 to 24 hours before you do anything else to them to make sure that they have fully cooled down in that whole process and that the lids have sealed completely.
Our time is running out, but I have two more things I wanted to run by you before we wrap up here. Will light hurt canned products? Should we keep them in the dark? And number two, how long are they safe to eat?
Yeah, good question. So we recommend that you store your canned goods between 50 to 70 degrees Fahrenheit, and in a dark place is recommended. And that, of course, is because sunlight, when it's hitting the food in the clear glass jars, it can impact the nutrient quality of the foods in the jar. So, yes, if you can put them in a cupboard or in a dark room, in a cellar, or, you know, even if you don't have any of those, just put it in a box or something that will block the light to keep it dark. That way you're not impacting the nutrient quality. And your second question then was, how long should we keep these? The answer is about a year. We strongly recommend that you use your canned products within 1 year for best quality.
Lots of good safety tips here, folks, about home food preservation, canning in particular. Anna Schweikler, you are a wealth of information. Thanks so much for sharing with our listeners here today.
Sure, you're welcome, Dave. Thank you for having me.
All righty. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
She is really knowledgeable. Yeah. Thank you, Anna. Okay, we take a break. We're going to be talking about VOICE. That's the Victim Outreach Intervention Center here in Butler. That's coming up next on It's Your Turn. Give us a couple of minutes, and we'll be right back.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Tobacco for Less is Western PA's largest glass emporium, and they now have a store in Butler at Pullman Square Plaza. What makes Tobacco for Less different from other stores? For starters, they have so many glass pipes to choose from. They also feature a walk-in humidor and a vape juice bar. And of course, they carry a variety of standard tobacco products too. The Tobacco for Less Health and Wellness Department stocks a large selection of high-quality CBD products. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
Welcome back, good friends. Boy, I'm looking forward to chatting with our guests on the next segment of It's Your Turn today. We're going to get an update on the Victim Outreach Intervention Center, known as VOICE, here in Butler County. And we're pleased to be able to chat with the director of VOICE, and that's Linda Strawn. Linda, good to see you. Nice to have you here today.
Thank you so much.
And the Victim Outreach Intervention Center, VOICE, is the next tier Spotlight Nonprofit of the Month. Karen Brackett is here, Vice President of Next Tier. Good choice, Karen.
It is a great choice, and we're very happy to have Linda here today to talk about all the wonderful things that VOICE is doing for the community.
You've been director of VOICE for about 2 years now?
2 years. October will be 2 years. Time flies.
Yeah, it does, yes. VOICE goes back a few years, though.
40.
Wow.
40 years. It's hard to believe it's been around that long. However, it has been around that long, yes.
I was going to take a guess, and I wasn't going to say 40. I'll tell you that. Yeah. I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
So for listeners who aren't familiar with VOICE, in a nutshell, tell us what VOICE is all about.
Absolutely. VOICE is a domestic violence and sexual assault center, as well as we deal with any kind of violent crime that someone has been a part of or involved with. We work with people directly involved with something like that, as well as someone who might be a significant other of someone who's experienced domestic violence or sexual assault. We work with all ages, children as well as adults. Mm-hmm. So we're a busy agency.
This has been a problem for a long time. Karen witnessed the fact that VOICE was created some 40 years ago. But, you know, it's really been in the news the last few years with the growth of the Me Too movement, don't you think?
You know what? I absolutely agree. And, you know, I think a lot of the communities are fortunate to have these type of nonprofit organizations around so that they can provide the necessary help, you know, for people that are in need.
Mm-hmm. You also have a safe house, I may be using the wrong terminology, but for victims of abuse, a wife or a partner who might be battered or afraid?
Correct. I think that is something that when the community thinks of VOICE, if they know what VOICE is, they usually do think of our emergency shelter or emergency housing. We're very proud to be able to provide that service. We have about 15 beds in our shelter to be able to house victims of domestic violence,
mm-hmm.
or as we like to say, survivors of mm-hmm. domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
Our shelter is specific to domestic violence, and that is something that we have provided for a long time. I'm really excited to say in the past year we have been able to upgrade our heating and air conditioning in the shelter. That was something that was a very big issue for us over the past 2 years that I've been here, and I'm so thankful we're much more comfortable in our summer months because we're much cooler than we were last summer. So it's an exciting upgrade that we were able to provide this year. So I'm excited about
that.
And
you say you could hold as many as 15 people there at a time?
Correct. Correct. Mm-hmm. And that's women, men, children. Anyone who needs our services. I think that's something that I like to make sure and say that everyone realizes that VOICE is not just about women. It's mm-hmm. also about men as well. So I want to make sure and say that today.
So this could be an emergency even like, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the morning sometime where a woman and a couple of kids may need a place to go where they
absolutely.
Can be safe.
Absolutely. Right. The only thing you have to do is call our hotline. And our hotline is our number one way to receive services. So I suggest anyone who is in need of any kind of information, call the hotline. It's 24/7, always. And that number is 1-800-400-8551.
1-800-400-8551.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that if the need would arise, that mm-hmm. number can be found online and in other places to probably call 211 and get that
yes.
information
mm-hmm.
If you
yes.
needed it in a hurry. We're talking about VOICE Victim Outreach Intervention Center. I've always loved the acronym because Well, it kind of says something. I mean, you're talking about survivors who, many times with your help, we can hear their voice.
Exactly. I don't know who started that. It was way before my time, but they certainly were very, I'm sure, decided on that because of allowing people to find their voice, gain their voice, feel like they are empowered again. And actually, we're thinking about just marketing voice and not even thinking about the victim outreach intervention center part. Mm-hmm. Because if we ever answered the phone with our full name, people were saying, is this voice? I was trying to call voice. So we wanted to just get that voice name out there.
By the way, you'll note, listeners, that we did not talk about where the shelter is. I've done some things with voice over the years. And I have specifically never, I don't know where it is. Mm-hmm. And we keep it that way for a reason because we...
Purposefully.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not publicized. And I'm not kidding. I have no idea where it is. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to know.
Right, right.
That's the way that it's set up. What about people who just, who don't necessarily need emergency temporary shelter, Linda, but just need advice or need somebody to talk to?
We have our hotline, as I said, and I think that is the best way to reach someone for services from voice. And because the hotline is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we need to make sure that people have an opportunity to call maybe when someone else isn't around, mm-hmm. they feel it's a good time to call. Those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So it's really important that we're available all the time.
Never thought about that. Mm-hmm. In certain situations, perhaps many.
Yes.
Let's just use a hypothetical example. A woman would feel uncomfortable calling if her partner were listening.
Correct.
Yeah.
We try very hard to always be asking very first when we answer the hotline, are you safe? Mm-hmm. Because that's the number one question that we have to make sure. And we also realize that not everyone who calls the hotline will even need to give a name because they're just not comfortable doing that at that point in time. So sometimes our job is to just listen on hotline. Sometimes our job is to listen and then try to give options and resources of things someone can do. It really is dependent on the situation.
Who answers the phone when someone calls the voice hotline?
Well, we all do. How about that? everyone, actually. So the hotline, which is interesting, rings everywhere in our all of our offices. It rings into my office. It rings everywhere. So anyone can answer the hotline because once you are a staff member at Voice, we are all trained to be able to answer that hotline so that we can help anyone anytime, and whoever is free in that moment will answer that phone call. So we have a plethora of people. Mm-hmm. We have counselors. We have what we call legal advocates, our administration people. We all answer the phone.
We're talking with Linda Strawn. She's the director of Voice. Voice has been selected by the folks at Next Tier Bank as this month's Spotlight nonprofit. We need to take a break. We'll talk more with our guests here on It's Your Turn on WISR Wednesday edition right after these words. We'll be right back.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Welcome back, friends. We're talking about VOICE, the Victim Outreach Intervention Center here in Butler County. Linda Strawn is the director. By the way, you cover the whole county, right?
Correct.
It's not just the central part of Butler County.
Correct. Anything. We cover the entire county. So, for instance, when we provide counseling services to someone who has called in and has become a client, we have an opportunity to meet up in Slippery Rock. We have a church that donates space to us. We have our corporate office in Butler, and then we have a donation area in Evans City. So we have lots of different areas that we are able to work with clients to try to manage what part of the county they're from to be able to work with them.
What about somebody that needs some counseling in terms of legal issues involved in a relationship that's gone bad?
We do have three part-time attorneys that work with VOICE, and they provide consultation on matters of protection from abuse orders, on matters of divorce and custody. They provide consultation on all those kinds of things for our clients. We do have some clients that may be above what we consider as far as our services in specific to the attorneys above assets. So we usually keep those services for those who can't afford an attorney because everything we do at VOICE is free. There's never any price tag attached to it. So that's why it's so important to us that we can provide to anyone who is in need, no matter what their ability to pay.
You mentioned protection from abuse order, commonly referred to as a PFA,
correct,
protection from abuse. I'm sure most people have at least heard of that. Sometimes we hear about it in a news story where things have gotten violent or whatever. But I dare say that most people don't know how you start that process. Say, and again, we're using a hypothetical example here. Suppose a woman wanted to get a protection from abuse order against a partner, a spouse, a boyfriend, or whatever.
How do they do that?
How would they do that? Yeah.
I would say the best thing to always do is to call in on our hotline and talk to one of our legal advocates or anyone actually at VOICE, because we all can answer some of those questions and make sure that they have the best option. Because as much as a protection from abuse order is a good tool, there are also things about the PFA process that, depending on the person, it can be something that they would not want to follow through on. So it's probably best to call in and talk through what the options are. The one thing that needs to be said, I think, is that once someone applies for a protection from abuse order, that is a very dangerous time in someone's life. That's why we like to talk to everyone before someone actually goes up to the courthouse, decides to go down to domestic relations, and starts the process.
And this would be a perfect example of something you alluded to earlier, where, again, using our hypothetical example, a woman would want to call and talk about this if the partner was listening in the kitchen.
Correct. And that's why when we have our phone calls on the hotline with different people, we talk about things like turning off the tracking mechanism on their phone. Are they connected to their partner's phone plan? What can you do to make a difference? Do we need to get them a track phone of some sort so that they can call us and they can't be tracked by their partner, spouse, whomever?
Man, I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Today's day and age, that's something totally new within the past few years. Wow.
Yeah, we, as you know, the climate out in the world is one of quite a bit of violence. And we have to do everything we can to minimize the danger as we can and mitigate that. And that really takes some talking with the client or with the person on the other end of the phone. They really need to think through what do they want to do, because it could be dangerous for them. And then we We just walk alongside them. We don't steer them in any one direction. It's really about what they want.
This is a problem here in Butler County. A lot of folks like to, you know, think, well, not in my town or mm-hmm. not in my county. Forget about that. It's all over the country.
Correct. Yeah. You know, I did bring a couple statistics because you think about that. Because yeah. people don't want to look at this and think, well, it doesn't happen around here. The one statistic that I found in preparation of this today is 1 in 4 women across the U.S. are involved in a relationship that it has violence attached to it.
1 in 4.
And then 1 in 7 men as well. So again, men and women, yes, women are typically more, it's more prevalent for women than men, but 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men. And I read this statistic that just astounded me. And I work in this every day, and I was still astounded that almost 20 people are physically assaulted by a partner, not, you know, someone they don't know, every minute across the U.S. 20 people every minute. It's just hard for me to even conceive that that's possible.
You can see my wide-eyed expression when you
yeah.
said 25% of women. Wow.
And it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And doubly so whenever kids are involved.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, Karen called and said, hey, do you want to be the spotlight? And I said, absolutely. Anything we can do to get our message out there mm-hmm. is what we want to do. Outreach and prevention is a very important part of what we do, as well as providing direct services to our survivors. But getting the message out is just as important. And how can we help to prevent or break the cycle of violence? Those kinds of things are what we talk about.
What about sexual abuse of children within families? I've read wire stories over the years that indicates that's far more prevalent than we would ever even dare to think about sexual abuse within families.
Absolutely. We typically would make sure that we're working in conjunction with the Children's Advocacy Center here in Butler. We have a great working relationship with them, depending on the situation that's happening. Also, we do work with, and something we've really worked on the past year is adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse, and in particular men, because of all of the information that's come out with the Catholic Diocese, the report from the Pennsylvania Attorney General's office. We specifically have tried to make efforts to get our message out to male survivors. I think a lot of people think of Voices Women, so we were really trying to let them know we're here for you. We understand the trauma you've been through. We're here to help as well.
And I've seen wire stories that this has happened within other denominations as well.
Absolutely.
I saw a story a couple of months ago about the Baptist Church, and I'm sure everybody has seen some of the TV coverage of some of the Mennonite societies where mm-hmm. this has been a real problem for generations, really.
Right. This is not just one. Absolutely, yeah. One denomination or religion of any kind. It's
and I've read wire stories where the vast majority of cases of sexual abuse of minors happens at the hands of someone they know.
Right, right. Well, that's absolutely typical. Mm-hmm. It's not people they don't know, generally speaking. As well as we have the ability to work with people who have been in the human trafficking situation. So, you know, a child who, and what I would consider a child, so, you know, 13, 14, really adolescent, who has run away from home, and because they're in love with this person, and they find out that really what they're into now is they're going to provide labor for that person, whether mm-hmm. that's through, you know, prostitution or through some other means, which there's a lot of different things that they're coerced into.
And don't think that doesn't happen here in Butler County.
Exactly.
Either. A final break. I want to talk about how Voice is able to fund all these great programs. So we'll mention that when we return after this final break. Be right back.
Recreational marijuana is in many states. Is Pennsylvania next? Over 50,000 people have already received a medical card from Compassionate Certification Centers for their anxiety, chronic pain, and other ailments that may easily qualify you. Call 888-316-9085 or log on to cccregister.com. That's cccregister.com. And chat with a healthcare provider at Compassionate Certification Centers. Find out more on medical marijuana by calling 888-316-9085. Ready to answer your medical marijuana questions.
You heard earlier Linda Strawn, who's the director of Voice, indicate that all of the services provided by Voice to survivors, victims, survivors, more accurate term, it's free. There's no charge. So that begs the question, Linda, how the heck do you fund all these services?
That's a great question. We are funded mostly through grants. So there are two coalitions that are within Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania Coalition Against Domestic Violence, the Pennsylvania Coalition Against Rape, and the Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency are the major funders for Voice that we get money through grants from them. However, that is the basic. You know, that meets basic needs for our organization. We are so indebted to the community for their support through donations to us, whether that's money or someone comes to donation day, which is the last Thursday of every month in Evans City, where they provide cleaning products, paper towels to used clothing and bedding that we need for people coming in with nothing.
And you have a fundraising activity coming up in a not-too-distant future, right?
We do. Actually, I would call this more of an outreach event, but it's because we want to bring awareness to domestic violence, and it is a 5K race on October 6th. It's at North Boundary Park in Cranberry Township.
Mm-hmm.
The race starts at 9 o'clock with registration at 8 a.m. It's $25 to run the race. The idea is to bring public awareness because October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and that is the point of it. And it's actually in memory of someone who was killed in a domestic violence situation, and that was Missy Bartow.
Oh, yes. Sure, many of our listeners are aware of that news story. October 6th, that's a Sunday.
Correct.
Right? Mm-hmm. How can people get more information on this if they want to participate?
It is on our website and our Facebook page. So feel free to get on there and look it up. And we will be posting flyers everywhere we can think of.
I think all of our listeners to a person, Karen Brackett, would agree that selecting Voice as the next year Spotlight Nonprofit of the Month is a heck of a pick.
It is a heck of a pick. And, you know, we are very fortunate that we can work with our nonprofit organizations in the community to help not only with the awareness of different things that they offer, but also to help with some funding. One of the ways that we do that is the sale of chocolate in our branches. By you purchasing a dollar, these funds go to the Nonprofit Spotlight of the Month, which is Voice this month.
And there are some 20 branches now of Next Tier Bank.
Actually, yes, we have 30 branches now.
It just keeps growing,
It just
Linda.
Keeps growing.
I just can't keep track of the total. Well, actually, and the difference would be, I'll defend myself a little bit, you have some in other counties.
Yes, we do have some in other counties. And actually, we do another nonprofit spotlight in Armstrong County, so we have it separated. But, you know, Next Tier Bank realizes the importance of giving back to the community and actually helping the partners in the community to service those that need it most. And Voice is a wonderful, wonderful program. And I know Linda had mentioned about funding, but, you know, for those listeners out there that would like to donate, you know, certainly, you know, donating, you know, items to, in Evans City on the the last Thursday of every month, but also monetary donations. You know, every year, usually around October, November, companies, you know, ask if you want to, you know, take money out of your pay every 2 weeks and donate to a nonprofit organization. This would be a great way to help Voice by doing that.
Indeed. Voice, the Victim Outreach Intervention Center. Linda Strawn is the director, and the hotline for Voice, anytime, any day, 24/7. I'll make sure I copied it down correctly here, Linda. 1-800-400-8551.
That is correct. Yeah. Yes.
You and your staff do great work.
Thank you. And I really want to thank Karen for inviting me today, and also for Voice. We always are in need of donations, whether it, like she said, whether that's monetary or items. It is how we survive. Mm-hmm. I can't begin to say the community has been so good to Voice in the past 2 years that I've worked there. They just really open their hearts to us. Christmas time is unbelievable. There is so much that is donated for our families, and we couldn't do it without the community. So the community support is just so important to us.
More information on Voice, Google Victim Outreach Intervention Center, Butler County, and our website will pop right up there.
VoiceForVictims.com.
Linda Strawn, director, and Karen Brackett, senior vice president for next year. Nice to have the two of you here today.
Thank you so much for inviting us. We always love coming on.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow, among other things, I think Mr. 60s is going to join us for a little bit of time tomorrow. And you've heard of the Master Gardener program? There's a Junior Master Gardener program. And I think we're going to be talking with some of those folks on tomorrow's program. So I hope you can be with us for the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. I'm Dave Malarkey. Enjoy the rest of your day. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again.